Hi, I'm Georgette Pierre, and you're listening to Black and Nuance Podcast, dispelling the idea that Black people are monolithic. Woo! In my late 30s, different catalysts forced me to examine my overall health. I thought I was pretty good at keeping up with my general checkups, but apparently being dissociated for over 15 years made me miss some shit. Plus, being a freelancer or contractor for most of my professional life, out-of-pocket health expenses tend to be a burden even though the care is necessary. Welcome to my life. Picture this, November 2020. I love my golden girls, okay? We're still in the throes of the pandemic. I'm living in a studio apartment in Harlem. I started a new job and all of a sudden, these very loud lower back pains come out of nowhere. I was a little taken aback. I was struggling to walk, move around, stand up straight. I didn't have much space to work with, but still, I had never encountered something like this. I was diagnosed with scoliosis in college and managed to dodge the extreme struggle bus. Now that I think about it, prior to the back pains, I had been very sedentary as one could be. I was always sitting down. I was working from my bed on my love seat, which was not that comfortable long term, and my non-ergonomic office chair. I threw a heating pad on the lower back pain and voila, they were gone after a week. Fast forward to February 2021. I got a new attitude and a new apartment thanks to the new job I didn't like. Right as I was feeling settled in my COVID-priced two-bedroom apartment, everything that could go wrong physically did, including my lower back pains coming back in a very debilitating way. It scared the shit out of me. I needed to see a chiropractor for this one. Apparently, all that pain was a high level of inflammation buildup.
It was just an accumulation of dysfunction over the years. It eventually accumulated to the amount that you'll get in a traumatic high-speed car crash.
A high-speed car crash? I had only been sitting down for hours at a time and walking the streets of New York occasionally. I mean, the sitting down part should have been less, but you get the point. My body was really trying to get my attention once and for all, and she got it. That's where the work of the sexologist came in, whom we'll hear from later. I was just so grateful that I had locked in two professionals that integrated other techniques into their practice, like my chiropractor using applied kinesiology, among other things.
So applied kinesiology is basically a way of asking the body what's wrong and also asking the body what it needs to fix it. And it incorporates chiropractic, meridian therapy, Ayurvedic medicine, a blood work analysis, to accomplish that. And so it's a more, I guess when you say holistic, it's more rounded as far as treatment. It's not just one thing, because not one thing won't work for everybody. There's no such thing as one size fits all. So if chiropractic doesn't work for somebody, then maybe meridian therapy will.
Listen, I needed more than just regular chiropractic work. It didn't help that I also waited until things got really bad to seek out the specialty care that I needed. Sounds like anyone you know? In comes Dr. Feltz, a chiropractor based in New York City, certified in applied kinesiology and functional medicine. Essentially, he leans into a more holistic approach in his practice. When I think about the term holistic, I think about the whole body, but the term holistic gets such a bad rap.
Yeah, it gets thrown around all over the place. let's say somebody comes in and they have shoulder blade pain. And somebody, you say that's not holistic, is just going to try and decrease that pain either by doing a massage or maybe giving them pain medication, something like that. But a holistic practitioner will realize that your gallbladder can refer pain to your shoulder blade. And so maybe it's not your shoulder blade that's the problem, it's your gallbladder. Fix the gallbladder, fix the shoulder pain or shoulder blade pain.
What was your holistic journey that led you to you incorporating a well-rounded approach to health and wellness, and especially in your practice?
Well, it actually starts with me as a child. My dad, he was very into nutrition, doing things naturally, not using medication. And he basically taught nutrition at our church. And he always warned us against things like fast food and sweets. We never used to have candy in our house. You know, once a week, our treat would be these honey sesame sticks from the Whole Foods store. They had to be organic. And he used to teach us that we should be able to get all of our nutrition from the foods that we eat. And it turns out that science backs that up, that we can use the nutrients in food better than we can use like synthetic vitamins and things like that. So it really started with him. And from there, he planted those seeds in my heart. Eventually, I got into fitness, became a personal trainer. And from personal training, I got into chiropractic. A lot of my clients would tell me that you would make a great chiropractor. So they planted those seeds. I took those seeds, they grew, and now I'm a chiropractor. And from chiropractic, I got into applied kinesiology. I started getting into blood work analysis and looking at people's genetic profiles to find out, you know, exactly what they need. Instead of just chiropractic, it's nutrition, fitness, chiropractic. So that was basically my journey.
When I think about wellness, I think about, you know, I started working with you when I had debilitating back pains. I started working with a certified clinical somatic sexologist who is also much more than a sexologist. I started working with a clinical social worker for points of therapy. During the time when I was doing all this concurrently, you all were my wellness avengers. And, you know, for me being in my late 30s, it was the realization that my wellness had to change. And, you know, as far as Black wellness is concerned, a lot of times we have had our skepticism around medicine. Obviously, we have been burned literally, physically, figuratively in the past as far as the industry is concerned. And there's this mistrust heavily of doctors and just getting the care that we need. What have you seen navigating as a Black man in your practice? Any challenges that you've had to face as far as with you showing up as a Black doctor and all the things that you do? And then even what you encounter with some of your clients that may have waited as long as I did till something happened to start taking, you know, a different perspective on our wellness.
Yes, a very interesting journey. In my class in chiropractic college, I was the only Black student in my class. Eventually, you know, one other Black student joined the class, but up until then, I was the only Black student. And I guess chiropractic isn't one of those things that are, I wouldn't say available, but that Black people look at as an option because it's just not really presented, you know, in our neighborhoods.
Right. And financial resources as well. We don't always have the resources or the access to some of these things.
Yes. Yes, that is correct. A lot of insurances, you know, the lower level insurances, they may not cover it. And, you know, our parents didn't talk about going to chiropractors. So it's not really a thought until somehow, somewhere along the line, somebody mentions chiropractic to them and they'll come in and see a chiropractor once they find out what we do.
There's always some level of barrier as far as health and wellness is concerned, and it just seems super amplified when it comes to the Black community. I'm grateful for your practice. I'm grateful that I was able to find you. So my story that led me to you was I had some very debilitating back pains, and they had appeared November 2020. I ignored it. Everyone's like, oh, you could cure yourself from whatever you need to buy from a store, a pharmacy, you're good to go, right? Like pop a pill, get a heating pad, drink some water, go to sleep. That went away after a week. And so I was like, okay, cool. It came back in March 2021 in a way that was very alarming. And I was like, Georgette, this is not something that you want to try to resolve on your own. And so I told myself, because I live in New York, I was like, well, I'm going to be very intentional. If any new doctors that I add into the mix, it has to be a Black doctor. I mean, I remember when I first walked into your office and you were just like, you know, I integrate kinesiology into my practice. Is that okay? As far as like asking for consent, I was like, doctor, whatever you need to do to get rid of these back pains, I don't care. And obviously, I'm not old, Dr. Phelps. You know, I'm not necessarily a spring chicken, but I'm not that old and I should be very, you know, active and moving around. When you saw me walk in to your office, what were your first thoughts?
Oh man, we have beautiful chairs in our waiting room and you did not sit down in them because I guess you figured if you sat down, you probably couldn't get back.
Correct.
And when I called you into the office and I saw you walk, that's where my appointment actually starts, when you're walking into the office.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm examining the way you walk. I said, oh, no. Okay, this is going to be a case. And, you know, I did feel bad for you, but, you know, I do all the training that I do in order to help people with you, like you, who are in really bad shape. And I just think that it was, you know, God, you know, basically brought you to see me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, you tell the people whether or not I was able to help you, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
It was.
I felt bad for you. When I. When
yeah.
I
I remember you even compared the amount of inflammation I had to a
high-speed car accident.
Yep. And I hadn't been in a car accident, Dr. Feltz. Nowhere near.
Yeah.
Nowhere near. And even to back it up a little bit, you know, I know some people wonder, could these things just pop out of nowhere? And from your expertise, a lot of these things are built up over time that we're not aware of. And I found out in my 20s when I was an undergrad that I had a mild form of scoliosis. Can you define briefly, Dr. Feltz, what scoliosis is?
Scoliosis is basically a curvature in your spine. Your spine is supposed to curve. It's supposed to curve forward and backwards towards the front and towards the back. But scoliosis is when the curve goes to one side or the other side. And basically, it's something that's usually diagnosed when you're a child, and it's monitored, and, you know, to make sure that it doesn't get worse. If it is getting worse, they may put a brace on you to keep it from getting worse, because with scoliosis, if it becomes really bad, it could be deforming to the body. Also, it predispose you to things like early development of arthritis. Depending on which way it grows, it can affect your heart. So scoliosis is a very, you know, serious thing that should be monitored. Most cases it's mild, but because of the scoliosis, people with scoliosis always have like a lot of tension in their back, because the body's trying to compensate for that curvature in the spine.
With me having a mild form of scoliosis, what happened to me as far as those debilitating back pains and later finding out that I had been sedentary for so long, was that the natural progression, or like the natural extreme progression of what happened to me?
Yes, that definitely does contribute to lower back pain, especially if you weren't exercising. You know, that's how arthritis is, basically degeneration of the joints or the cartilage tissue of the joints. And one of the ways that cartilage stays healthy is through exercise and movement. So if you're sitting most of the day and you're not really getting out there to exercise to feed your joints, then yeah, you can develop arthritis and what have you, and it can contribute to low back pain. So the scoliosis itself can cause low back pain, but then also the other effects of scoliosis, as far as arthritis and things like that, can also cause low back pain. You know, it actually turns out that in the course of treating you, that the traditional chiropractic adjustment didn't really work for you.
Mm-mm.
You know, it was other things that worked for you. We actually had to stop doing the adjustments.
Mm-hmm. It was a journey with Dr. Feltz, and I could say 2 years later, I have a much better relationship with my back and my body overall. But Dr. Feltz wasn't the only person that helped me along the way. Before the back pains came back in an alarming way, I was kicking it with a friend in town. Sexual energy was strong between us, but nothing happened, and apparently, to my surprise, nothing was going to happen. He sensed that I was dealing with some emotional baggage that was above his pay grade, if you will. I thought I was fine, but his no sparked a fierce curiosity in me to dive deeper emotionally. So I sought out some professional help within my network. I first turned to my spiritual mentor, Miss Lisa, who's also a licensed social worker. I told her what happened, and she referred me to a certified clinical somatic sexologist who she had referred clients to before. I didn't know what a sexologist did, but I trusted her recommendation. Why would someone need to work with a sexologist, you ask? Well, I was about to find out. I started working with Nikki Morgan in March 2021, who went by the name Keither when we recorded this interview back in December 2022. Keither is so much more than a clinical sexologist, though. I think there's a lot of limitations around the title clinical sexologist or clinical certified somatic sexologist. And so when we started working, there were some things that I didn't realize I was stuck on, I guess, for lack of a better word. I know there were some things that I hadn't been exposed to sexually, but not realizing that I was repressed in a way. And working with you kind of opened some of that stuff up. But I would love for you to expand a little bit more, Keith, if you can just even expand upon your work, what led you to your work.
Yeah. Thank you for the question. So this vessel, in my consciousness, I have memories of my other lives, my parallel lives. And one of the profound memories of this was being Horae, H-O-R-A-E, overseeing the temples, answering people's curiosities that may have had challenges connecting to the divine, or before unionizing, or wanting to learn their own bodies. I found myself in this consciousness repeating some of the happenings of these other lives. I started running an escort service. There was a murderer going around. And this was a few decades ago now. And what came clear was there is a huge misconception around our sexuality. As it relates to our society, as it relates to the secrets that we keep and how we bring all of this, all of what has not been expressed to be transmuted by erotic energy workers, sex workers, and then looked at and then perceived them in a shameful way. So, when it came time to transition out of that life, and this was also while I was working full time at an international watch company, and making more than enough money, traveling, living very full, very very full, but there was something that drew me to this, and it was there after I started listening, I felt sad for the clients that called, that couldn't express themselves in the world, and they had to do it in secret. I felt uncomfortable that the people that were holding space for these clients weren't supported for medical, were not treated as human beings. And so that was a moment in the transition, the exit of this lifestyle, that chapter, that it was time to find a legitimate way to share and show how we and what our body sex, our sexual energy is actually utilized for. And then I went to school for sexology in California. And you're right, clinical sexologist was still not enough. It was still not enough. And so as I started to go deeper, many years later now, I claim the title Intimate Alchemist. And Intimate Alchemist feels more resonant with just the nature of everything that I'm moving through and what we are moving through and what I support.
Yeah. You know, something that I thought about when you were sharing in regards to us or bodies just not knowing how to utilize the erotic or sexual energy within them. Everything always is filtered through the lens of sex, like body sex, physical sex only, right? This colonization of pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I know when I started working with you, to even add a little bit more context, is I had been dissociated from my body. And after realizing what dissociation was, I was like, oh, there's a lot of people moving through the world, mm-hmm. dissociated from their bodies. What's the best way to describe dissociation for those that don't know? And then how did some of the things that you started going deeper within as far as practice and techniques help people break through those dissociations, people including myself.
So dissociation, if we just want to be very simplified and just pull it apart, right? We are disassociating from the body. We do not feel that we are inhabiting this body. We do not know how to fluidly express through this body. In some extreme cases, we may even feel like we want to attack the body because it is not what it feels like is of you.
When you share that definition, it makes me think about the somatic piece. Can you define what somatic work is and what the term somatic means?
So what we're doing is much of what we are experiencing is experienced through these vessels, through these bodies. And to be clear, we are not the body. We have a body. Okay. And this is important to recognize in how you move through and navigate life. So the body holds on to stories. The body holds on to emotions. The body will remember the traumas. And if the body doesn't feel safe, then the conversation, the relationship between you and the body becomes wildly fractured. And so what somatic work does is it helps to dissolve those walls between your body and you in this relationship. This is where the essence of intimate alchemist came from. It's cultivating intimacy with the body, intimacy with who we're connected to, intimacy with nature, intimacy with the world that we're experiencing. And it is primarily to dissolve these worldly perceptions that keep us locked into the pain and the dissociation and the forgetting of who and what we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love how you said wildly fractured, because it is very visceral in the defining of it, because now that I'm no longer dissociated, I'm not even joking when I say this, Keither, my body doesn't have any memory of anyone that I was physically intimate with prior to me starting the work, the healing work of reconnecting with my body. And I was like, oh, wow. That's why so-and-so may be louder than XYZ pre-March 2020. I'm like, talk to my body how people talk to God out loud. Like, okay, God, what's up? I'm like, body, so what are we eating today? Oh, you don't want that. Okay, understood. The body speaks very loudly when you understand. And I couldn't even fathom the work that I was going to do with you. With you not necessarily attaching to identities, you present as a Black female body. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that is normally seen is our bodies, is our, you know, perceived gender identities. Mm-hmm. When you started doing this work early because you just knew that this is something that you needed to do spiritually. What did you navigate as a Black presenting woman in this body temple in your field? Because again, terms like the colonization of pleasure, those things only started becoming language that I started learning more about when I started doing some of the work with you.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing back some of those memories. Absolutely. In the beginning, this was a huge body conversation for me, right? Because, you know, in order to hold space and create containers, it must be something that the body experiences. You have to embody it in order to hold the space for it, proper space for it. And so, you know, to run down the list, things like what is sexy, right? That's a big one, fed through media. You know, the long hair flip in slow motion. You know, my hair is kinky and I love my kink, you know. that's, you know, and, you know, sitting with the acknowledgement, you know, around family, around friends, you know, you know, perming is a have to because I can't handle my hair. Like, it's something that grows out of your head. Like, this is part of your body. What do you mean you can't handle it? You know, mm-hmm. that speaks to us not being able to create space for ourselves, period. Mm. And then that also spoke to what's happening in the world, and what we have access to for our own societal support. My voice, oh my goodness. My voice, our voice, feeling wildly uncomfortable being on conference calls with, you know, no shade to the avatar, but, you know, very colonized, wealthy white men that have no idea about where this journey has come from, and not expecting them to, but holding all of this, all of these second consciousness behaviors, feeling like what I might say might be stupid or may not be important. When a masculine voice, when a deep voice is in the room, you know, there's an authority. And even if you know what you're saying is no, this doesn't make any sense. This is that what you're saying doesn't make sense, because the groups around you submit to that voice, then it puts you in a space of scrutiny. And let's talk about scrutiny. You know, when you start moving into your primordial energies, and you start evoking, I have been walking orgasmically for approximately 20 years.
Okay, yes. What does it mean to live orgasmically? I feel like the word has been reduced to the idea of a feeling or action that only comes from having sex.
There is a colonized view of orgasm in which we perceive it as this burst of release, like, oh, and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. This is what I call the prefrontal cortex orgasm. It's a memorized orgasm. It's a way for your identity to say, this is what I know makes me feel good. This is how my body feels good. Cosmic orgasm is a full release and connection to all. And that all becomes sensitive to the body. Since the body can feel everything, when there are releases, when there are excitement, when there is something that that arouses, no matter what the arousal is, it could be arousal to anger, it could be arousal to pleasure, whatever the arousal is, it's felt so much more profoundly in the body, which is in essence where we all are. But being, as you said in the beginning of our speak, the dissociation is so far, so far, so normalized that we don't recognize that we can feel the birds flying across the sky. Like, we can feel a sunrise, you know? And so when we understand how these sensations feel in the body, then we have greater comfort and trust in how we walk and what we experience and how we navigate the world we are experiencing. And so what that does when we do that, then it spins up the decolonization of everything, right? So it means that all of those degrees that I thought I had that made me the most intelligent person, it doesn't have the same value anymore, because you can feel everything. You know, you are always going to be where you need to be. And then that shifts also the identity of success. And so success is not based no longer on what everyone else thinks about, but rather success is truly the sensation that you have and what you and your primordial identity have decided to express in the world. And so the integrity of that is not based on anyone else but you. And the quality of what you want to put out is still based in you. And so if there's anyone and anything, whether they tell you that you're beautiful and you're smart, whether they tell you you're ugly and you're stupid, none of it has the same weight unless you make it matter. You are coming from a primordial identity.
Can you briefly define primordial as well?
Sure, absolutely. I'm primordial first, the first identity. And even if you don't have a thought process around living many lives, that's still okay. There is a part of this vessel and the learned identity that you've taken on that people said, you do this, this is your color, this is your culture, this is where you live, this is how you go to the bathroom, this is what your name is, all of that, right? And you immediately accept it because there's no context when you're a child. But there are memories in your DNA. There are deep, deep memories in your blood of what it is, what purpose you have, what your plan is, and it's all already there.
When you made mention of learned identities, it made me think about a few things. In my late 30s, there were experiences that I didn't think were possible, and things I'm still deciding if I want as well. I present as a Black American woman, but I have roots in the Caribbean with my parents having emigrated from Trinidad and Tobago. So I had a very different experience than fellow Black American friends, colleagues, associates, whomever. What were some of the things that you had to shed, and how did you help some of us in our own space shed the learned identities that were no longer serving us?
I want to preface this with shedding the identities did not mean that they go away forever.
Yeah.
What shedding of the identities means, I release my unhealthy attachment to it.
Attachment, yes.
And I negotiate my relationship with it as needed. This is my relationship, our relationship. I will let you know when I want to go a little bit more intimate with you, and I'm good right now if I don't. So, money was a big one. Money was a big one.
Isn't she always? Oh, gracious.
Yeah. I don't have enough money, and I don't want to ask for more in my work. Money in just allowing and accepting people to support and help, and acknowledge the work that I am expressing in the world and its value to them. Money in there was a point where I witnessed money being a master for so many people. And so I went through a battle with money. I was like, fuck you, money. I don't need you. I'm going to go and create my sexual energy and watch. And all of that is absolutely correct. The things that I've created in the world without dollars is amazing to me, that we have the ability to do that. However, I still held the identity that money had this kind of power, because anytime my work went forward, everyone could be as free as they wanted to be. But as soon as money came into the picture, it was like, oh, well, I can't do it. I can't afford it. I have to work. I have to do this. I have to do that. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, well, you know what? I'm giving it to you for free. Now what? Now what do you say?
What are your excuses? Yeah.
What are your excuses now? Right? So I finally reconstructed my relationship with money, and money is so happy to serve me. Money is so happy to serve me. Other identities is being my mother's daughter. and I don't mean like the position and the role of being my mother's daughter is fine. However, I recognize that our history and some of the things that I held on to that made me a victim child, and the angry parent or whatever, were those conversations, and letting those things go, that identity. And how I shifted that identity to start was I changed her name. I no longer called her mom, because I knew that mom and mommy and ma would trigger that line of identity. And I renamed her Mango. And Mango is I have such an amazing relationship with Mango. And there's space for us to exist together, even if we have vastly different thought processes. And we can hang out and it's okay. And Mango is my friend, my consultant, and my birth giver. So, you know, like, we really go in, like, you know, the person that always says yes, am I allowed to say no? And what is my sacred no? And I am always yes, right? Because the universal womb is all consuming, and I am connected to everything in the universe. But when I offer my sacred no, it is because everything always says yes to me.
Mm.
So it's okay for me to say, you know what? Not right now. That's okay. I'm good. I'm grateful that I am called upon, but my vessel is at its capacity for that right now. And that's okay.
Mm. Mm. My vessel is at its capacity for that right now.
Yeah. Got to take care of her. Got to take care of these vessels, because these vessels are unconditional with us. The heart keeps beating. The blood keeps running. The breath keeps breathing. And it doesn't question. It doesn't say, well, you didn't do this yesterday, so I'm not gonna beat for you.
You know what's so funny with me saying that? I was listening to a spiritual service, and he said, Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith was like, a tree doesn't have a no in it. Like, there's no in a tree, yet we will say no to ourselves, to what's possible. And I was like, a tree doesn't say no, because it just grows. It is planted, it is rooted, its branches just go. And I was like, a tree doesn't, and it just, so when you said that, it just kind of made me think about that with our bodies. And you're right, every time I get out the shower, I always thank my body. I'm like, our heart doesn't stop beating, right? And when it does, we know we have transitioned on, but like, the body is literally in obedience to us. Walk us through some of the things that people can be mindful of as far as taking care of themselves, you know, if they're not working necessarily with a professional or someone certified. What are things that we can do now to really take care of ourselves in a way that people aren't always cognizant of, or are not always, other communities aren't interested in the well-being of us?
So when I'm approaching this answer, I want you all to take into consideration that the obedience that the body has, and the way we communicate with the body, is what will open up more of its intimacy. So it's just like pressing that first domino in order for the rest of the dominoes to go down. What I used to do, I would take days where I would do deep breathing all day. Just breathe like the animals. A lot of times we tend to breathe only from our chest. Breathing from your gut all day. I know that it seems so simple, but that kind of breath changes how your brain processes. It changes how your brain processes. It activates cells that aren't usually activated when you are breathing a very shallow breath in your chest. Something so simple. I know, breath in your sex, breath in your walk, all day. Just try it. Just fully breathe. So I got in the habit of breaking habits. I would ask myself, okay, why am I doing this? Am I doing this just because? Or am I doing this because there is an aroused purpose that I am choosing in this moment that has nothing to do with yesterday, nothing to do with tomorrow? Can I be fully present in the choosing of this right now? And you would be surprised how much of our identities are habitual. And then, so who are you?
Yeah. Like, are you just doing it just to do it? Right. Is there like a real reason attached to said thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason doesn't, in fact, I have shifted my relationship with reason. Reason does not remove obstacle, right? That's the saying. Reason does not remove obstacle. So all it does is just move around things already in the illusion. So I have removed myself from reason, and Body and I have a conversation like you do. And certainly Body is not the only conversation, but I still utilize my human identity. Like, this is what I'm moving with. And my primordial identity is my all. It's the voice that you're hearing in your head is not you. We are interdimensional beings. And yeah, that is real, you know? And so being able to identify what these voices are saying, deciding who to lean in with and who not to. Are we all on the same team? And if we're not, then you gotta go, mm-hmm, right? New relationship. Because mm-hmm, everything that we create has consciousness. Mm-hmm. Every word that we speak has consciousness. So mm-hmm, that's what makes the English language so tricky. Because you're using your eye in all of these different ways. So there's even a Sufi practice that I do that I was sharing with you before, and removing the use of I. And then you start to understand why some of these old books speak the way they do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't recognize that when you're saying the I hope, I this, I that, you are consummating over and over again the relationship that you thought that you let go of. Consent is not just in our words. Consent is not just in our bodies. It's whole self. So those are some things. The last one that I'll say is sometimes I will do silent days, or sometimes I'll just be silent for every morning. I had a partner that lived with me that we had to speak in sign language because if there was something okay that he really needed to talk to me about, I had to, okay, I'll support you in that because we are cohabitating. Otherwise, let me take a break from this voice. Maybe let's take a break from communication altogether. Mm-hmm. And still walk in the world. Don't hide away. I'm still walking to the store. I'm still, you know, playing with my dog. I'm still hugging my children, but I'm not communicating in the way that I would usually lean in on communication through those words.
I told you, Keith, ain't your typical dictionary definition clinical sexologist. Ask about them. The biggest work I did with Keith was truly inhabiting my body. Once the dots connected, everything else happened with ease, things that I never thought I would experience. What you're about to hear next is a loud example of why we need to use our words and energy wisely. I'm grateful that Keitha was willing to share their story. And their story is a trigger warning for anyone sensitive to domestic situations. Keitha, life has a way of interrupting the vision we have for ourselves. Tell me a time you had a what the fuck just happened moment. A life interrupted moment that caused you to course correct personally, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, or physically.
For the sake of your podcast, I'm going to give a warning. So if you are sensitive to any kind of domestic situations, then, you know, breathe while you listen. This was a very big course correction or life interruption, as you put it. I have been in this flow, walking orgasmically. Life is flowing for me exactly as I desire, right? Because I'm in the flow. And so I recognize the level of my perceived, I can create whatever I want when I want anyway. So whatever. Not really respecting so much the rules, our natural laws that offer flow. So I had three lovers that I was with for 3 years, 1 year, and another, and these were all concurrent, running concurrently, and another for, I want to say we were maybe 5 years. I was doing so many things. I was like, you know what? I'm ready to see, what does it feel like to have a baby? I said, you know what? I'm going to ask them. One of them is going to give me a baby. And I sat with each of them separately, and they all gave very reasonable answers why they were not ready. Very, very reasonable answers. And one was not in the proper mental health. Another, very highly spiritual and knew what was coming, was like, yeah, I'm not going to live past this time. So yeah. And that's another conversation. And the other actually had just impregnated someone. So it was like, you know, I'm at capacity. It's like, okay, well, then what I did, when I loved these three people. I loved them. But I was like, well, if they're not going to give it to me, then I'm just going to go make another partner that will give it to me. And I left all of them. I broke up with all of them. And I broke up with them very egotistically, very egotistically. Mm. I sat with myself and I said, okay, so this is the kind of lover that I want. This is the kind of parent that I want them to be. And yeah, so boop, 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 boop. I want them to be interested in ba, 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 right? And I kid you not, I said it the Sunday morning and I got a text message from a person that I didn't save the number, but they said their name. And I assumed that it was another person with that name. So I was like, yo, come over. Yeah, that's fine. Sure. I opened the door and it's not the person that I thought I was talking to. Mm. But I said, oh, okay, well, come on in. Sit down. They wanted to learn more about my work. So I was just sharing. And then as they were sharing about themselves, they said everything that I said earlier that Sunday verbatim.
Wow.
I was like, so in my spirit, in my head, I'm like, oh, the bakery came soon. Okay. You know, egotistically, okay? Magically egotistical, okay? So it doesn't go away if you have the, it doesn't. You have to check yourself always, okay? So when I recognized that they said the keywords that I said earlier, I was like, I opened even more. So then I started playing with the energy that I work with. And I started opening up their gates in their body and we started to have fun. It was an intense week. We had a date in Prospect Park and all you New Yorkers know that it's okay for us to be topless in New York. If you have breasts, you can be topless legally. And so if you find me in a park in New York, chances are I'm topless. So we're having this date in the park. And it was Prospect Park. I'm gonna tell you the park. And it was also on a super moon. And if super moon was in Pisces, I'm a Pisces, that's my sun sign. And we were drinking wine, we were eating strawberries, and as dust started to hit, I was throwing the strawberry tops up in the air, and bats were flying down and catching the strawberry tops. And I was dancing, I'm topless dancing, and I'm in my underwear, so I'm practically naked, right? So feeling very free, laughing. There was even a point where we played a little bit, and so I squirted in the earth. So I'm telling you guys all of this to say, I want you to pay attention. This is ritual that is going on. This is ritual that's happening, and I was being irresponsible with it. So there was a point where I'm dancing and then the person grabs my my wrist and he pulls me close and he goes, oh my God, you're so amazing. I want you to have my babies. And again, in my head, I'm like, ding, ding, ding. I know I made you. Like, duh. I don't say anything. I just smile. I don't say anything. I smile. So now we go back to the house. And you know, I'm feeling aroused. I want to play a little bit. But what I said to the person was, I do not want to have any penetrative exchanges right now. So we can play, but no penetration. So now, mind you, you know, this is I'm in control. I'm in control, y'all. I got all the control. I know all the things. I'm a magical being. So now we play, and I've been opening up his gates the whole way through. This was the last gate that I opened. I opened up his last gate while we were playing, and he threw his head back. He started to tremble, and then he howled, and then he pushed me back. He turned around, pushed me back, and he got 3 strokes on me. And it was at that point I kicked him off of me. Thank goodness for my martial arts, my martial arts history. I kicked him off of me, and I was so pissed. I was infuriated. I was like, how dare you? I told you that I didn't want this. Blah, 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 blah. I was angry, and I was putting on my clothes like, you know, you got to go. And in my mind, I already made up my mind. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna start traveling in the next few days, and I'll just travel the country. I'm not going to be bothered with this anymore. I'm going to put down this whole baby dream. I'm good. I am on a bus to Syracuse, and I can feel, this is only 2 days later, and I can feel something in what I was like, this feels strange. Is this, do I gotta take a dump? Do I gotta take a shit? Like, what's happening? What is this? Mm-hmm. And the feeling continued, and then dreams started, landed in Syracuse, and then the dreams happened, and I was like, okay, is this? This can't be right. And I ended up going to take a pregnancy test, found that I was pregnant. Now I'm going to speed up the story for y'all. The pregnancy put me on bed rest. I could not do any of the activities, any of the things that I usually do. I'm fully active. I ride bikes for 30 miles minimum a day. There were so many things that I would do that I could no longer do. My identity started to crash. I didn't know what was going on. The depression started to hit. The semen that belonged to him, as we know, when we absorb semen in our bodies, it changes our DNA. So I was taking on characteristics of his mother, not even knowing who his mother was.
Wow.
And I was angry. I had feelings of murder. It didn't make sense why I was this angry. I had no idea. The doctor that we went to see, the OB, she demanded that we were married. Otherwise, she would not put him down as an emergency contact. And then about 4 months in, I couldn't take it anymore. I called one of those partners that I left. And I said, this is what's happening. It's turning into a mess. And this was the first time that person ever yelled at me. I was like, you know what this is. Why would you do that? You know, and I want everyone to understand, this is not victim blaming. This is not, I want you to understand, this is a different paradigm than what we are colonized to understand. This is not victim blaming. What he brought to my attention was how I was using this energy, how I was using this creator energy, and how irresponsible I was being with it. And so he said some Hebrew words. He spoke to my womb. He said some Hebrew words to my womb. I had a dream that I met an entity that I said its name, and it went away. The next morning, the heartbeat, I felt like myself. The next morning, I felt like myself again. I was like, wow, I feel fine again. I had to go do my checkup that same day. The heartbeat was no longer there. And because the heartbeat was no longer there, the OB sent us to the hospital to double check. And it was exactly that. The fetus had no longer had life. And it was now time that I needed to move this dead fetus out of me. And my OB would not answer my calls.
Wow.
And so it took about a week. And what saved me was Steamy Chick in California, shouting her out, Steamy Chick in California. I reached out to her because I thought, well, yo, if I'm not having this baby anymore, I got to start a different kind of work. So I'm going to start interviewing. So you know what? Let me try to interview her. I started with her, but that's not what that call was for. And somehow I had to share it with her. And she goes, all right, go in your cabinet, get these seasonings. I made a yoni steam. It was the first time I had ever steamed before. She said steam every day until you start bleeding and then stop. And
right.
When I started steaming, I had no idea. I thought I was just going to bleed out. I went into full labor and my entire family was away, which that never happens. That never happens. So again, this was the vortex I created with my egotism. So I ended up being in a painful labor and then birthing death in my mother's bathroom. And then, you know, having to close it out, you know, so I did a burial. We did, you know, we said the words that we needed to say. And I promise you, after I did all of that,
mm-hmm.
The things that they said was wrong with my womb, why I ended up being on bed rest to begin with, no longer existed. And it wasn't even something that you could cure. It's something you're born with.
Right.
And that wasn't the case. It wasn't the case. And it was no longer there. So what this says and what I want y'all to understand is, one, you need to be very careful with how you create. You need to be fully aware of your shadows. You need to be fully aware. Put down the ego when you are creating whatever you are creating. And in essence, even the word creation isn't even the proper word. We are observing is what we're actually doing. That is the frequency.
And calling it forth.
Frequency, yes. Because everything already exists. The other thing that I want everyone to understand is your reality is far more malleable than ever. Mm. It's far more malleable than you think. Far more malleable if you allow it. And so this was a life interrupted space, but it was a gift. It was a painful gift that I needed. You can't call the police. You can't call mom.
No.
You can't say, oh my God, I'm lost. Somebody, nothing. Figure out your own puzzle. Figure out your own puzzle and navigate your way out of it, because you are connected to everything in the universe. So it was a life interrupted moment, and I'm grateful to share it, because as you can see, like, it's not stuck. This is a share that I want you to know, so that way you don't do the same thing, so you can learn from the reflection, because I am you. So that was a life interrupted moment, and I'm grateful.
I'm so grateful for Keithers sharing their story. They say the greatest lessons are the ones you learn from others. Duly noted. Life is about seasons, and there are some that we can actually name. Wrapping up our conversation, I asked Keithers what they would have named the chapters of their life before and after their life interrupted moment.
King of the world.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. I promise you, I was walking in full stride.
King of the world. I love it.
Everything was disposable and everything came to me.
Yeah.
King of the world. Now it is, everything is my teacher. Yeah.
Ashe.
Ashe.
Dr. Feltz gave us insight into his life interrupt the moment as well.
When I was a personal trainer, I always worked for the gym. I always had, you know, set hours that I had to be there. And I started working for one gym, and they had a setup where you work for the gym and you have hours, but if you have a certain amount of clients and you keep that client base for a month, you set your own hours, and basically you're really becoming your own boss, except for you don't decide how much you charge. The gym decides that. But just from simply going from having to be at a certain place at a certain time, because, you know, my boss says I have to be there, all of a sudden I had freedom. I could choose which days I need to be there, what have you. And after that, I said, there's no way I could ever work for someone again. I did, but it was only for a very short time. But when I realized the freedom that comes and the control that you have over your own life when you work for yourself, I said, okay, this is really the way for me to really live my life. So, of course, you know, with that comes, if you work for someone, you have a job, you have an employer, you know, you have a salary that you can depend on until they may decide they don't need you anymore. But other than that,
right,
you know, you have a salary you can depend on, you know, you have benefits. And when you work for yourself, you know, you don't have that. However, you have control over your own business. When I worked for a chiropractor, I worked for another chiropractor for about a year. And the only thing that I was allowed to do was adjust people. I only see them for 5 minutes at a time, and that was it. When I got into my own practice, I had the option of being able to adjust people. I can counsel them on nutrition. I can do applied kinesiology. I could do psychological kinesiology. I could do all these different things. So I had, basically I had control over my practice, my profession, and my career, basically. And so—
But it also sounded like you had control over the wellness that you really wanted to offer people that they also deserved too.
Exactly. I've done so much training and I've sought out, you know, the masters in the profession so that I can learn to be a master and I can serve my patients to the best of my ability and most effectively. Like I said, chiropractic may not be for everybody, but if chiropractic isn't for you, then I can find out what is for you and I can, you know, do that in order to help you get better.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just sounds so— basically working for someone else was like, this is the catalyst that I need to start my own practice, despite what challenges starting one's own business will entail, essentially.
There's something to be said about having your own and running your ship the way you see fit. What would you have named the chapter of your life before your life interrupted moment?
The title of my story before my life interrupted moment would be at work looking at the clock. The reason why I say that is people who are at work looking at the clock aren't really enjoying what they're doing, not doing what they love. And I believe that would have been me.
What would it be now?
I've been into business for myself, opened up my own practice. I would say the man who was a creator, healer, and teacher, because that's what I do now. I teach others. I also believe that I create just as my Father God is also a creator, so I'm a creator, and he's a healer, and because he's inside of me, I can also heal. I have the power of healing within me, and I use it every single day that I come into the office, and even at home with my family.
I don't know about you, but I'm quick to hold on to doctors that I feel have my best interests at heart with my care, especially as a Black woman, since some doctors don't take our pain seriously. I'm so grateful to both Keith and Dr. Feltz for being available at the right time in the right season of my life. I'll have their info listed in the show notes, but Dr. Feltz, starting with you, how can they find you online and learn more about your practice?
You can get in touch with me through my website at www.drfeltz.com. That's www.drpeterhelttsandtomssandsally.com. And you can also call the office at 212-286-2012, and we'd be happy to help you with whatever you need if we can.
What about you, Keith?
If you wish to connect with me, if you wish to connect with our community, intimatealchemist.com is where you want to go. Intimatealchemist.com is where you want to go. For 2023, there are ceremonies, there are memberships that we can that allow us practice in what we already know. So as we step further into our knowing, you know, you can take a class, you can take a few weeks, but as you mentioned, you know, what were the things that I did, right? What were the things that we did? And so to make it available, open system is the way to go. So everything is open system. If you want to come for a day, 2 days, you want to take, you want to sit with us in an intimate alchemist session for an hour, 2 hours, one time every single week, you have the ability to do so. Because we need to be in practice in order for this embodiment to anchor the new paradigm that we are shifting into. This is Renaissance right here.
To even fathom that I began this work 2 years ago and still kicking in my late 30s at that, I didn't imagine. Although now when I run some of these lived experiences back through my mind, I'm not sure what's supposed to happen any differently. I mean, are there some Negroes I could have left in the dust? Abso-fucking-lutely. Did I need to save face with people whom I didn't feel emotionally safe around? Of course not. But I had no fucking idea that I was doing any of these things because I was on autopilot, completely detached from my body. My mind did what it thought was best for us during those 15 plus years of being dissociated. And I'm grateful for my body for holding me down during those times. So what the hell happens next for me and my pleasure and healing journey, as I like to call it? Well, the pleasure part is none of your business, but the healing part, well, I have a therapist for that now, and I'm starting there. Full-blown conversations with my body have been in full effect for some time now, including affirmations after I get out the shower. I truly thank every part of my body for holding me down. I'm working on saying yes to myself more and continuously interrogating my relationships with people, places, and things. Because at the end of the day, this Black woman is still alive and doing as well as I can for myself and what I have capacity for. And that's more than enough for me. Until the next episode, peace. This podcast was written and hosted by me, Georgette Pierre, associate producer Tristan Bragg, and co-producer and editor Wise Grisette for the Indie Creative Network. Music by Otis McDonald, King Canyon, and Bail Bonds. You can follow my conversations on Twitter at Georgette and Instagram at Georgette Pierre. That's GeorgettePierre. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Black Nuance Pod. That's Black, NuancePod, or email us at blacknuancepod@gmail.com. Spelled the same exact way. Subscribe and share from your favorite podcast app. We're streaming on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and more. Thanks for listening.